I also don't think that weight is the end point of health. So looking at your blood pressure, looking at your heart rate variability, looking at your sleep, all of the other things that you're measuring that are a reflection of your total health are also things that we should be focused on, not just the number on the scale.
My name is Lee Farnison. My brother Anders and I are on a mission to help 1 million vegans get into the best shape of their lives. We firmly believe that the more healthy and fit vegans there are in the world, the faster veganism will spread. Let's work together to inspire change, spread compassion, and challenge the status quo. Welcome to the Vegan Gym Podcast. This is part two of our vegan health and fitness tips. I hope you enjoy the rest of this episode. So for my next tip, I want to share a quote that I absolutely love, and that is, the more ways you measure, the more ways you can win. So this comes back to tracking. How are you tracking your health and fitness journey? And there are so many different ways that you can track your health and fitness journey. I think the classic one that most people look at is the scale and tracking their body weight over time. That is just a small fraction of how you can track your progress. And in fact, I don't even think that's not the best way of even tracking your health and fitness progress. It's a kind of an easier way, but I think it can be beneficial, but the scale does not define your progress and define how you are doing. And it also isn't the only way you should be tracking your progress. And it doesn't even need to be a way that you're tracking your progress. So I actually think it's hard to get better than some kind of body composition testing. So using something like a DEXA scan or InBody scan, being able to track how your body composition is actually changing over time, because a scale does not capture that. It tells you how much you weigh at one particular point in time, and that doesn't take into account your body's water balance. It doesn't take into account any kind of food that you might have in your system. It doesn't take into account your menstrual cycle. It doesn't take into account how your body is actually changing. You could be losing body fat and gaining muscle at the same time. So even if your body weight is the same, you could actually be improving your body composition over time and feeling healthier and stronger. And the scale really can't tell you that. So it's just one data point, and there's so many other more important ways to track your progress. So Daphne, what would you say are some of your favorite ways to track progress?
I think you actually identified a couple of them. So I'm a big believer in the DEXA scan or the InBody, partly because, to your point, the scale doesn't determine your body composition. And you can be very lean but not healthy, or you can be the same weight and have seen those changes in terms of gaining muscle, your bone density is increasing. So having a measure other than the scale is very helpful. I also don't think that weight is the end point of health. So looking at your blood pressure, looking at your heart rate variability, looking at your sleep, all of the other things that you're measuring that are a reflection of your total health are also things that we should be focused on, not just the number on the scale.
Well said. So yeah, the takeaway here is measure in multiple ways, and they don't just have to be data driven. You can also have subjective measures of your health and fitness progress. How do you feel? How do your genes kind of fit? Whatever that looks like for you, there are a multitude of different ways that you can track your progress. Don't distill your entire health and fitness journey down to a single number or a single series of data points.
I don't own jeans.
Yeah, actually, I don't own jeans. How do your gym shorts fit? That's pretty much what I wear. All right, next tip, be sure to support optimal health with some kind of supplementation. So I'm a big advocate of using food as supplements. So some examples of that would be eating walnuts and having some flaxseed, which I include in my smoothies, for omega-3s. I have seaweed pretty much every single day for iodine, and I historically have had a Brazil nut every day for selenium. So those are some examples of having food as supplements. And I use that term because I wouldn't really eat these foods unless I was getting some kind of benefit from them. And maybe other people love walnuts. I would much prefer almonds myself, but I will eat walnuts because they're just kind of generally check more of the health boxes. And that's also the main nut that Dr. Greger recommends, especially for longevity. So those are some examples of using food as supplements, but then supplements as supplements would be having some kind of B12. So that is the absolutely crucial thing that you need to be supplementing with. So having some form of B12, and I also use an omega-3 supplement, and I have that every day. So I use an omega-3 supplement, which is just from algae oil, and I have that for preformed EPA and DHA. So you can get plant-based forms of ALA, which you're going to get from walnuts, flax seeds, and chia seeds, other sources like that. And your body can convert ALA to EPA and DHA, but the conversion rates typically aren't that efficient. So I personally use an omega-3 supplement. There are other people who say you don't need it. And there are some people I really respect who say that you don't need it. But personally, I just like using it as kind of a, just to be sure, supplement. And it also doesn't hurt to include a multivitamin in your diet if you want to just kind of be safe, or if you are kind of struggling to, if you've been tracking your nutrition and struggling to hit various targets for whatever reason, you can include a multivitamin. And if you do include a multivitamin, it almost certainly has vitamin B12 in it, so you just wouldn't need to have B12 by itself. And a multivitamin can be especially helpful when you're traveling and don't have access to all of the healthy foods that you normally eat. So that's something that I pack whenever I'm traveling. So I'll just have a multivitamin and omega-3 supplement as well. And that really checks all the boxes that I need. So that's another tip, is just being sure, especially for vitamin B12. I think another important one would be vitamin D. And it's in the winter months, especially, or if you live in an area that doesn't get much sun exposure, or if you really don't get out in the sun on a regular basis. And generally speaking, you need to get about 15 to 30 minutes of direct sun exposure to your arms and your legs, meaning you should be wearing a t-shirt and shorts. So if it's freezing outside, then you're not going to want to do that. So that's why, and it's 15 minutes for people with lighter skin and 30 minutes for people with darker skin. So that's just kind of a good kind of general recommendation. But yeah, if it's in the winter or you're not getting out and getting sun exposure, then having some kind of vitamin D supplement in your diet is really crucial. All right, next tip is experiment with optimizing your sleep.
Ooh, a favorite.
This is something I've been really nerding out on recently. So it's really not that complicated when it comes to sleeping well. Like, the inputs are fairly simple. It mostly comes down to just make sure you have the right environment and make sure that you have the proper wind down routine at the end of the day. So some just general suggestions that definitely aren't anything special, or at least these are the general recommendations anyone will give you. But having a dark room is really crucial. So I use blackout curtains, and for me, that's really necessary. Whenever I travel and I don't have blackout curtains, I'll bring an eye mask or something like that. Another one is turn down the temperature. I really like it to be about 65 degrees, which can be a little cold when you're getting up in the morning. But as long as you got a full night's sleep, it shouldn't be too tough to get out of bed in the morning. So turning down the temperature, 65 degrees, something in kind of the mid-60s is generally the kind of go-to recommendation. And if for whatever reason you can't get your room down to 65 degrees, or you sleep with a partner, or you have someone else in the house and you can't get it down to that temperature for whatever reason, or if that is too expensive, or I don't know. If there's some reason that you can't get it down to mid-60s at night, then you can use a bed cooling system that will actually blow cold air under your sheets to keep you cool. I think one example of this is 8Sleep. I'm actually looking at a few options myself, and there are a few options you can find on Amazon for a couple $100s, and that can help you sleep if that's easier than cooling your entire room or your entire apartment or entire house. So that's another good way to go about it. Another tip within how to kind of optimize your sleep is go to bed around the same time every night. Mm-hmm. Really simple and straightforward, easy to do. And that's also important over the weekends. The weekends are not, your body doesn't look at the weekends as being any kind of special days. So you, if you actually want to get in a good groove, you don't want to like be working to get back on track on Monday evening and then you get off track every Friday and then Saturday night and then
every
Sunday,
day has to be the same.
Who knows what happens? Yeah, the more you can just introduce kind of this same routine to your body, the better. Another one that's very simple and straightforward is have a pre-sleep wind down routine. So just whatever you kind of find works best for you. I really like a method called the 10-3-2-1 method that I've heard online. And that is each of those numbers corresponds with a number of hours. And the 10 is 10 hours before bed, no more caffeine. I actually don't have any caffeine ever, which is probably even a better approach if that works for you. And also, most people use caffeine as a crutch because they don't get optimal sleep.
Right.
So it kind of actually is a vicious cycle that happens where you're not getting enough sleep and then you use caffeine and then you don't sleep very well. So you use more caffeine and then you definitely don't sleep well. And it just kind of keeps getting worse and worse. So 10 hours before bed, no more caffeine. Ideally, 24 hours before bed or 1,000 hours before bed, no caffeine. Then 3 hours before bed, no more food or alcohol. Ideally, same with caffeine, no alcohol ever. That's what Daphne and I, that's our approach, and that works really well. 2 hours before bed, no more work. And I would add no more drinking at this point as well. So drinking water or whatever it is. And certainly, hopefully not alcohol. You definitely, just as a kind of public service announcement, I can let you take this, but what's the healthy upper limit of alcohol intake?
There is no safe lower limit of alcohol intake. Yeah.
So zero.
Zero.
You heard it from Dr. Bascom. All right. And then 1 hour before bed, no more screen time. So no phones, TVs, computers. You don't have any screen time and you can do some kind of journaling. You can read a book, whatever that looks like for you, doing something else that doesn't involve a screen. Some other ways you can optimize your sleep are investing in a high quality bed, testing different kinds of pillows, sheets to ensure you have the most ideal bed possible for you. This is something that I've been working on. And the reason that I think all of this is so important is you ideally spend a third of your life sleeping. It makes sense to invest some time, energy, and money into ensuring that time is well spent. So most people, unfortunately, spend more on entertainment than their health and certainly spend more on entertainment than their sleep. And that's really unfortunate. So let's work to change that by working to optimize our sleep and investing in that. Another tip is to find a handful of your go-to healthy meals. And then you can use those to just kind of rotate throughout the week and throughout the month. So I would highly recommend that you work to find a few go-to breakfasts, a few go-to lunches, and a few go-to dinners that you really love and that have the general nutrition profile that you need to be successful in accomplishing your health and fitness goals. So making sure that they're higher in protein, making sure that they check all of your micronutrient boxes, making sure that they just are generally the right nutrition profile for you and your goals. So and I think this is really important because most people tend to just rotate through somewhere on the order of 10, maybe a dozen different meals. And those are kind of their go-tos that they have. So why not work to ensure that those go-to meals are both really delicious foods and meals that you truly love, but are also nutritionally on target for your goals. So I would highly recommend that you take some time to do that. In fact, I think that is one of the best ways that you can systemize long-term nutrition success.
Agreed.
If you want to get to a point where you are eating intuitively, meaning you're not tracking every single day, and you are also continuing to accomplish bigger health and fitness goals, really the best way that I have found to do that, and I've been eating intuitively for pretty much over 4 years and doing a little tracking here and there, but hardly any at all. The number one thing that I would recommend and the number one thing that has worked for me is having go-to meals where you generally understand the nutrition profile and they're also meals that you truly enjoy eating. All right, another tip is eat high volume if you're struggling to feel full, especially when your goal is fat loss. This one is pretty straightforward, but a great way to increase volume is adding veggies to pretty much everything. Veggies are the go-to for increasing volume. So you can add veggies to your smoothies. You can dice up veggies into tofu scrambles. You can dice up veggies and put them into soups. You can blend veggies into sauces and dressings. You can obviously chop veggies into salads. You can add tons of veggies to stir fries. You can pretty much add veggies to anything. In fact, you can even add cauliflower rice to your oatmeal for additional volume. There are so many different ways that you can incorporate veggies into your diet, both for savory and sweet meals. And that is a huge game changer when it comes to feeling full and satiated throughout the day. Another small tip that I really love is freezing spinach, bananas, freezing a bunch of actually different fruits and veggies to throw into smoothies or whatever you want to incorporate those into. So I actually buy fresh spinach from the store and I put the entire container right into the freezer. And I actually really don't eat that much fresh spinach. Pretty much all the spinach that I eat is frozen. And I find that typically the frozen spinach that you get in the store is, I don't know, sometimes it's a little weird. And so I rather get fresh spinach and then put it right into the freezer.
It's like it's been chopped up and...
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It looks like it's been chopped up. And sometimes it even, I think this is especially true for kale, but the manufacturers somehow seem to always be able to fit as much of like the stem part in as possible.
It's stemmy.
Like the kale that they grow for this is like 60% stem. I don't understand how that happens. I think they're scraping off some of the best kale and putting that into some kind of fresh meals, or I'm not sure. But that's why I buy the fresh spinach and then I'll put it directly into the freezer. And as a pro tip, if you are getting that in some kind of plastic container, if you open that ahead of time before you freeze it, it's going to be a lot easier to open. So I would recommend that. And it also, if you try to open it when it's frozen, it also, the plastic tends to kind of like chip off and flake. And you definitely don't want to be inadvertently putting some
plastic
into your smoothie. Talk about some getting your daily dose of microplastics. All right, we don't want to do that. So that's what I do. I buy fresh spinach and then I put it into the freezer. And you can really freeze any prepared fruits or veggies that you want to blend into smoothies, sauces, or add to stir fries, tofu scrambles, whatever. That's a great way to pack in more nutrition. And speaking of frozen fruits, for me, frozen fruit is a game changer. Most of the fruit that I eat is actually frozen. And frozen fruits are usually less expensive than fresh fruits. So they're usually less expensive. They're also picked at the peak of ripeness and they last for much longer than fresh fruit. So for all of those reasons, I use frozen fruit more than fresh fruit. And I don't seem to have the same issue with like the kale in
with
like
fruit.
Veggies. It seems like sometimes the frozen veggies you get are not great, but I usually don't have any issues with frozen fruit. All right. Another tip is have healthy meals on the counter, ready to go, easily accessible foods that you can use to make the right nutrition choice. So having things that are at eye level, having things that are just easy to grab and go. For example, apples and bananas are really my go-to. I always have those out on the counter and I have generally a few apples a day and maybe 1 to 2 bananas a day. So that's a really great snack for me. What are some examples for you?
Probably some of those snacks should be lower calorie density snacks. Because if you have you can have a bowl of nuts on the counter and it's easy to snack on a lot of calories from just a handful of nuts.
Yes. Yep. Good point. And there's a reason that I have my nuts in the pantry and not just like out and about on the counter to easily grab. So yeah, having healthy snacks just ready to go. And speaking of preparing healthy food ahead of time, that's another tip I really recommend, is just having healthy food that's ready to go. So this doesn't necessarily need to be meal prepping, but if you want some awesome vegan meal plans that you can actually meal prep, then we have lots of those on our YouTube channel. You can go check that out. Just search for The Vegan Gym on YouTube. And we've got tons of healthy, highly nutritious vegan meal plans that are packed with protein. So we can give you a bunch of ideas there. But preparing healthy food ahead of time does not need to be meal prepping. In fact, what I typically do is I just have healthy food prepared ahead of time with just simply washing and chopping veggies in bulk, for example. So I'll go through and chop a bunch of broccoli and then rinse it and put it into containers that I can easily grab from, and then throw broccoli into whatever I'm making. And that just makes it really easy. So every single time I want something healthy, it should be easy to grab that and easy to incorporate that into a meal. So it doesn't necessarily need to be fully prepped meals, but if you have fresh, healthy ingredients that are mostly prepped and ready to go, that's a great way to ensure that you make healthier choices. Another tip would be track your nutrition in some way, at least for a little bit of time. So you need to develop a feedback loop to understand how certain foods make you feel and what their nutrition profile is. You need to understand how many calories are in different foods to be able to ultimately kind of master intuitive eating and do that for the long term. So yes, long-term tracking your nutrition every day does not lead to long-term sustainability, but it is a stepping stone to get to a place where you can have a long-term sustainable nutrition plan that is aligned with your goals. So I think that tracking way is really in some way required to get to a point where you can eat intuitively in a way that supports your health and fitness goals. So tracking doesn't need to be a long-term thing, but it does need to be something. It is a very helpful tool to understand the nutrition profile of different foods. And there are going to be some foods where you kind of weigh them out and you input them into MyFitnessPal or Chronometer, which are kind of the go-to nutrition tracking apps. And then you're going to realize, wow, this has double the amount of calories that I thought it did. And that's important. It's important for you to understand what is the general nutrient composition of foods in different quantities. So I have developed kind of an intuitive sense of what the nutrition profile is of the foods that I have in my diet, and generally how much of each one I should be eating. Or if I want to have some more of a certain meal or a certain food, I kind of intuitively know how to adjust the rest of my day to make all the numbers work out. And you don't need to be super focused on nailing every number, but just generally developing an understanding of what is the general nutrition composition of these foods that I'm eating. So that's important.
And even if you've been intuitively eating for some time, it never helps to do an interim check because there can be some drift. So as you said, you've been intuitively eating for 3 to 4 years. If you're going to go into a different phase of your health goals, your fitness goals, track for a week and just see where you are and get a new baseline.
Yeah, actually, I'm gearing up to do that right now. And I'm going to be tracking a little bit through that process. And when I'm focusing on fat loss, I do track my nutrition really every day, or I at least develop a nutrition plan and I follow that exactly every day. And that is really important for me. And I think generally important for most people, because your body doesn't intuitively want to maintain a calorie deficit. So for me, I need to ensure that I'm maintaining the appropriate calorie deficit by tracking my nutrition. So that's something that I will be doing. All right, another tip is watch out for hidden calories, what I call hidden calories. This is creamer in your coffee, it's oil in your cooking pan, it's oil in your salad dressing. It's a lot of these quote unquote hidden calories that maybe aren't really maybe not a substantial part of your meal, but it's these little additions, sauces, dressings. These tend to be higher in calories because lots of them include oil. And that's why I'm a really big advocate of low or kind of zero oil eating. And you don't need to totally avoid oil, but just understand that the oil that you put into your pan when you're cooking does get added to your meal. It doesn't magically disappear.
It doesn't just sit in the pan.
Doesn't just magically disappear after it helps to. And I understand cooking with oil can make some foods taste better, but there are also a lot of other ways to be creative about it and not need to use oil and still make super delicious food. So oil is not necessary for cooking. And the number one tip that I would give you for cooking without oil is just getting a super quality nonstick pan. And if you have a quality nonstick pan, then you're not going to need oil to cook. And if you want to add a little bit to your food for whatever reason, you can do that, but just don't let them be hitting calories. Be sure that you are taking those into account. And the reason I actually stopped cooking with oil is because I started tracking with it and realized this is a heck of a lot of calories. And I rather have this other food that's going to satiate me than this tiny little portion of oil. Restaurants are especially dangerous, and you can certainly go out to eat. I think that that's an important part of long-term sustainability, but you should be very conscious of oil and just generally have a good idea of how many calories you're actually eating. So don't be afraid to ask for the ingredients list of your dishes. Don't be afraid to ask for no oil. Mm-hmm. If you do eat out regularly and you don't do this, then you're going to probably struggle to accomplish your health and fitness goals, specifically if you're working to lose weight. Because let's say a normal calorie deficit might be somewhere on the order of 500 calories on a daily basis. And that's just a couple tablespoons of oil. You can easily add a couple of tablespoons of oil into your cooking throughout the day, especially if you're going out to eat and not really even realize it. So some other tips when you go out to eat are calling ahead or looking at menus online to see what your food options are for that restaurant. Don't get stuck at a restaurant that doesn't have what you need. Don't go to the restaurant and then try to come up with a plan. That is not a recipe for success. Planning ahead is how you can win. And don't be afraid to ask waiters for what you need. So I ask if they have nutrition facts for dishes, if I haven't figured that out ahead of time. I ask about the ingredients that are in the dishes. I ask for food swaps regularly. And I try not to be difficult, like that's not the point, but just telling people what you need and being really respectful, polite, kind about it, nobody is going to have an issue with that. And if I think that a dish contains oil, and most restaurant dishes do contain oil, then I'll request that they use minimal oil or ask them to remove it altogether and prepare my food in another way. Maybe that's baking, steaming, whatever. So don't be afraid to speak up and ask for the food prepared in the way that you want it to be prepared. And I also often ask for extra veggies and often ask for extra protein, like having some more tofu. Mm-hmm. Again, as long as you're kind and respectful, there's nothing wrong with asking for what you need. And also, I tip well as a thank you for going the extra mile. And yeah, I think everyone wins from that. And by the way, if you are another tip for eating out, if you are eating at a non-vegan restaurant and you're concerned about dairy products sneaking into your meals because you ask the waiter and they don't seem to know about dairy or vegan or anything like that, you can always say that you're lactose intolerant instead of just saying that you're vegan. People will take that much more seriously. And also, it's almost certainly true because most humans are lactose intolerant, whether you know it or not, because surprise, surprise, we're not baby cows. So you're probably lactose intolerant. So you can just say
you're speaking the truth.
You're lactose intolerant. So that's another a pro vegan eating out tip that I would recommend. All right, getting up to the end of the tips that I have here. All right, another one is get some kind of support and accountability in your corner, whether it's a coach or other people who are working to accomplish similar goals. Having some kind of accountability, support, encouragement in your corner is absolutely vital, I feel, for long-term health and fitness success. And then the last tip that I want to share is do not discount mindset wins. Not all progress is physical.
Correct.
And there is mental progress that you will be making along your health and fitness journey. Those are huge wins. In fact, I would argue those are even bigger wins than the physical wins. So mindset wins are incredibly important. Don't discount those. Also, there are kind of health wins that people tend to discount. So not all progress is fitting into a smaller gene size or seeing the number go down the scale. So just acknowledge that there are, as we talked about, there are lots of different ways that you can measure your progress. So the more ways you measure, the more ways you can win. Don't discount these other, maybe less standard ways of tracking progress when it comes to the world of health and fitness, like mindset wins or health wins when it comes to your blood pressure, cholesterol, whatever that is.
But those may be more important for the long term than the scale win.
Exactly. All right. So those are a bunch of my top health and fitness tips. And now, Daphne, let's hear some of yours.
Well, the great thing is that a lot of our tips align. So I'll just touch on a couple of the ones that I think augment what you were talking about. And I use everything in the framework that I call the 3 M's. So looking at your meals, your movement, your mindset, your sleep, your stress, and your social connection. But I think one of the most important things that I wanted to reiterate is that I set my intentions on Saturday or Sunday. So Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening, I'm planning for the next week. Because if you fail to plan, you can plan to fail. So just making sure I know what my meals are going to be. I have a sense of what my workout's going to be. If I know I'm traveling, do I have everything I need in my suitcase? Planning is important. It doesn't have to take a long time. But if you spend 15, 20 minutes just planning your week, it will pay off in dividends. From a meals perspective, I would say the only thing that I would want to add, maybe 2 points. One, going back to your sauces, is you can probably make a sauce or a dressing better than anything you'll buy in the store, and you know what's in it. So I think every plant-based eater should have a good sauce or dressing that they love, but I would encourage you to make your own, because that way you can use whole foods, you can control the oils that are in it, no preservatives, and you can judge it up anytime you want to and put it on just about any meal that you make for the week. You know, just touching on your fact that you're about to launch into your own health journey, one of the tips that I found that I want to share, especially for anyone listening who may be on a fat loss journey or just a health journey in general, is don't be afraid of food. I think we have villainized foods or different food groups or different macros, and people have become polarized in terms of good food and bad food. I think when I actually learned to eat well is when I made my most gains. And it was, again, eating healthfully, having healthy snacks, not excluding anything that I like to eat, but knowing that I can eat in volume and still achieve my health goals. So don't be afraid of any food. You talked about leaving your ego at the door of the gym. So when we talk about movement, probably 2 tips that I would want to add to the list are, especially for any of the ladies listening, respect your ego, but don't be afraid to lift heavy shit. I mean, there's nothing more gratifying than doing a heavy deadlift, or, you know, you can grow muscle at any time in your life, but you have to stimulate your muscle in order to do it. So yes, I think I completely agree with you, form and function are key. Don't try and lift what the person on the bench next to you is lifting. Follow your own path, but don't be afraid of picking up a barbell, you know, going and putting the plates on the bar, because that stimulus will actually help you long term. And I think you may have touched on it, but another movement tip is focusing on stretching, because I think prehab is better than rehab. So traditionally, I see a lot of people go into the gym and they just kind of go into the gym cold. which is a recipe for disaster over time. And the same thing with your run. I think I've learned the hard way through little micro injuries that stretching, foam rolling, all of the things that we know are good for us to do before a workout or after, take the time. You know, 5 minutes at the beginning, 5 minutes at the end will pay off long term when you're not having to be sidelined because of an injury. We talked a little bit about mindset, but I think the other thing about mindset that it's a tip that I like to share with people is always have a plan A and a plan B. Whether you're talking about your nutrition or whether you're talking about your workouts, plan A is always the optimal plan, but something or other may go wrong, and don't feel like you're off track because you haven't thought through the alternatives. If you're going out to eat with a group of friends or family, and maybe the restaurant changes, you looked it up, you know what you're going to eat, they're going to change direction, that's okay. Plan B always can work. So don't be so fixed in your mindset that you can only adhere to plan A, that you can't explore the other option and know that that will be successful too. And then I think most of my other tips echo all of yours.
All right. Well, we covered a heck of a lot on this episode. So yeah, I hope that this has been helpful. Our goal is always to share hopefully some gold nuggets in all these episodes that you can take and apply into your own journey. And these are some of our top health and fitness tips that that we've both worked to learn over time. And they're things that we have found to be super valuable to the thousands of clients that we worked with as well through the Vegan Superhero Academy. So yeah, thank you so much for listening. And we look forward to catching you on the next episode. Thanks so much, Daphne.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. We really hope that you enjoyed all of our health and fitness tips, and we look forward to catching you on the next one. Thank you. To get access to some of our best content for free, head over to thevegangym.com. We've got tons of articles and guides to help you burn stubborn body fat, build lean muscle, and supercharge your health. You can even use our vegan nutrition calculator for free to figure out how much protein, calories, and micronutrients your body needs. Get started right now at thevegangym.com.